just the way it is. Some things will never change.
If this is the way you remember pianist and songwriter Bruce Hornsby, well, you've missed a lot. Since his hit-making days of the 1980s, Hornsby toured for years with the Grateful Dead. He's gone bluegrass with Ricky Skaggs. He's played jazz with Wayne Shorter and Charlie Haden. And now, on his new double album called Solo Concerts, Bruce Hornsby is experimenting with 20th century classical compositions. For this new live album, Bruce Hornsby's written a lovely set of liner notes. You remember those, right? And he opens with this: dedicating oneself to the pursuit of the unattainable is a beautiful way to live a life.
Let's just take the study of the piano. You could spend two lifetimes and not deal with the totality of the literature that's been written for the piano. As a late starter, I started at age 17, junior year of high school. So I got a really late start. Certainly in the classical world, they say if you haven't started by, say, age 7 or so, then forget trying to be a classical pianist, a virtuoso who makes his living playing concerts. That's one area where this is clearly the pursuit of the unattainable for me, because I'm interested in virtuosity on the piano, and I try to deal with it on an intense level. But that is totally an unattainable area for me.
Well, given that you started at 17, I have to say there is virtuosity on display here. I mean, I'm a pianist myself. This album presents a very different way to listen to some of your music, very much through the lens of 20th century classical composition. I wonder what it was about those composers that attracted you. Schoenberg, for one, as opposed to, say, Chopin or Bach?
Okay, well, when I was at Berklee College of Music, you could go to the Boston Public Library and borrow records like you would borrow books. For some reason, I was drawn to the 20th century music. Charles Ives was a huge favorite of mine and still is. In fact, I almost got sued. One of my first singles, Every Little Kiss, had an intro that was a sort of an homage to Ives. It was basically paraphrasing the beginning of the third movement of his Concord Sonata. It's called the Alcott. But fast forward, what really got me deeply involved in it, okay, in 2003, I signed with Columbia Records. I'd been at RCA for 18 years, and one of the greatest aspects of being a Columbia recording artist is they allow you to raid their vault. So I had them send me 176, 177 CDs.
Whoa.
And I filled in a lot of areas in the classical area that I had been interested in but had not really dealt with, because it's so vast. I got most of the Glenn Gould catalog. And I realized that he was not really into romantic music. He really loved the rigor and, I don't know, just sort of Spartan aesthetic of Bach and modern music. And I think maybe he thought that they were kindred spirits. And I sort of felt at that point in my career that I felt the same way. And so I started working on certain pieces that moved me. It just broadened my horizons.
Let's take an example here of how you've kind of incorporated all these different parts of your own musicality. And you segue from this boogie-woogie piece of yours called Preacher in the Ring.
Wrap the snake and watch them all sting as they go ten round with the preacher in the ring.
To a couple of compositions, one by Webern and this wild piece by Elliot Carter. What do you want us to hear? What are you saying here?
I guess what I'm saying is that this music that I've been so interested in for a good number of years now allows for a greater depth and variety of expression. And so if I'm singing a song that I've written about the snake-handling congregations of Appalachia, and it's sort of a bluesy boogie piece, like as you mentioned, I could just play the standard sort of blues-based music in the right hand if I'm soloing over it. But I feel like that's a little straight and a little kind of goes down a little too easy. So I use that as an excuse to put these pieces, the Webern piece, which is very pointillistic, and the Carter piece, which is atonal and sort of a perpetual motion piece, they feel to me like they're evocative of the lyrics, evocative of the scene that I'm painting with the words.
So when you strut out on stage in front of a crowd that fell in love with your
when
work.
When I strut out, yeah.
Yeah, well, you strut, I would hope.
With my Elton John costume, with my, yeah, that's really me.
They're not necessarily expecting to hear an atonal piano piece. I wonder, do you talk to them about the set? Or do you talk to them about what to listen for as you're playing?
I do. I talk to them. But here's the deal. These are sort of tried and true for me. I've been playing these pieces for the past couple of years in my solo concerts. Mm-hmm. Sure, there are some people there who are there for a nostalgic reason, and I try to be nice to them, and every few songs play one of those songs. But there's a very sizable contingent of people there who wish I would never play those songs.
Mm.
So frankly, it makes it so I get sort of yelled at by both factions. I just catch it from all sides. But that's fine. It's my lot in life because I've continued to move on and I haven't stayed the same. And that's to me is the way a musical life should be. Keep on pushing, keep on evolving and changing.
That's Bruce Hornsby. His latest album is called Solo Concerts. It comes out on Tuesday. Mr. Hornsby, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks a lot.
She came back around like nothing really happened. Left him standing on, oh.